Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, good morning. Oh, what a day. Another beautiful day, a little cooler. Enjoying that bit of a break today. Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We also have a very special, you get the very special tacked onto your name, Dr. Dan Nelson. How about that? Yes. Very special, Dr. Dan Nelson. All right. How is everyone feeling this morning?
Great.
Feeling good?
Feeling
good?
Great.
Stupendous.
Yes. Yeah. It's Saturday morning. The sun is shining. I mean, yeah.
Not in this room with black walls. It's not.
Well, outside it is. You can imagine what it's like out there.
All right. Well, yeah,
we drove in a few minutes ago.
No, that's true. Although when I left the house at 5:15 this morning, it was still pretty dim.
Yeah, it's starting to get dark earlier and earlier in the evening. And yeah, there's a chill in the air. Have you
there
noticed
is.
That?
Oh, yes. I've noticed. It's 57 degrees where I left the house this morning.
You know, we're so used in the Pacific Northwest to have layers. Even in the height of summer, I always like grab a second layer and then I go, wait, it's really hot. Do I need a second layer?
Yeah.
Yes. But today, yes, and we really needed it.
Yep. Oh, yes, we did.
Well, see, I go the other way. Uh-huh. Outside, it's in the 60s. I'm okay in a single shirt. But then in the office, if it's going to be 80, they turn the air conditioning in so much. I need a sweater in the office when it's 85 degrees. Yeah. They overchill it.
Yes, it's too much.
I have a second layer in the office, too.
Very good.
Well,
all right. Well, should we dive in? And Dr. Mixon, why don't you tell us what is on the top of your mind for what's going on with medical?
Well, I came across a couple of articles, and I printed out some little reminders here. This is one that Dan would be really interested in, I think. Yeah. Bioactive peptide with modified hyaluronic acid. This is for cartilage repair. There's actually doing some experiments where they put in some bioactive peptides with modified hyaluronic acid. It forms a scaffold. The stifle joint in sheep. Sheep can weigh a couple of hundred pounds, 150 pounds for a big one. That stifle joint, which is the equivalent of our knee, wears out quickly in sheep. And so they've now practiced this this combination, just injecting it into the joint.
Okay.
And it forms kind of a gel, attaches to the cartilage, and triggers growth of new cartilage. It actually forms new cartilage over a six-month period.
Wow, nice.
So the next step is to try the same thing with human beings.
Sure. Because, you know, cartilage is avascular, and it's impossible to make cartilage grow.
Yeah.
After your natural growth.
Stem cells help. Okay, so you can take MSCs out of your fat or your bone marrow, and you can trigger some with microtrauma to the cartilage, getting it to grow some.
But it's mostly inflammation that it targets, doesn't it? Or does it?
Well, both. It's the two-headed coin of regenerative medicine is the anti-inflammatory component, which is a good anti-inflammatory action.
I'm sorry, Lynette, I can't hear him on my headphones.
Oh. Yeah.
There you go.
We got, there we go. I think I'm on.
Yes.
Lynette, you've got him on the wrong microphone because he's over on that side of the table. If he's going to use this microphone, he needs to move over here.
Here we go. I'm switching him back again.
Okay.
Okay.
So fun. There we go. We're going to put you right here, right where you were. Okay.
All right. Let's see what happens.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
Okay. Now try you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Not very well. No? We need to turn your microphone up just a little bit.
That's probably it.
Now, for you folks out there in the audience, you can't see this, but we are practicing. All right, we're in our new set. We're practicing videoing us today so that we can take a look at it. We're not streaming it. We're just going to video so we can see all of our boo-boos and errors. So you're getting to hear the amateur hour as we're getting started and practicing our new setup here.
I'm
getting
just
ready
I could
for,
troubleshoot.
For video streaming. Yeah.
And know where the problem was and what I could do. All right, so you're sounding good.
But the advantage of this newer technology is with a different scaffolding made out of the hyaluronic acid, along with some bioactive peptides, they're actually growing new cartilage for the first time and repairing the stifle joints in the sheep. Now, the next step, of course, is to try it in human beings. But if we can actually grow new cartilage in these, you know, arthritic folks, this will make an enormous impact on the need for, you know, replacement knees and hips and so on.
Right. The most common surgery in the U.S. today is
joint
knee replacement.
Knee replacement.
That's right. And so, you know, if we can do that with a simple injection and then grow whole new cartilage within 6 months or so, that would be mind-boggling. Of course, it would really upset a whole lot of orthopedic surgeons who are now suddenly out of business.
That could be,
Dan, it's more popular than cataracts?
I think it's more prevalent than cataract.
Really?
Last I checked, most common surgery in the U.S. was...
I mean, yes, it's definitely up there. Think about it. Pain is the number one reason a patient will go to see a provider in the United States.
Absolutely.
Somewhere
around 700,000 knee replacements in the U.S. alone per year and growing. Yep. Now, they're doing them on younger and younger people, which means... in 10, 20 years, they're going to be looking at a revision, which is a big, bloody, messy surgery. You know, and most orthopedic guys don't like doing the revisions because it's...
They like doing the primary ones because they're easier.
Yeah, they're easy. Yeah.
But you see, the nice thing here is this would be a simple injection instead of a major surgery, and it would be the sort of thing you would be doing.
Absolutely.
You know, instead of just the stem cells, you probably would do the new matrix along with some stem cells and PRP to kick it into high gear. Because then you might replace that knee in 4 or 5 months instead of 6 or 7 months.
I love to have things on the menu to choose from.
So anyway, that's a great...
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So there's a research being done in Australia.
So Samir, you mentioned the cartilage doesn't have a blood supply. Not exactly. There's a watershed effect in the cartilage. So there is a blood supply of sorts, but it's not like a direct, you know, capillaries going. But there's a watershed diffusion type blood supply. So nutrients can get to the cartilage.
Yeah. Well, for 20 years, orthopedic surgeons have been trying the micro trauma.
The microfracture.
Yeah,
right.
Where they go in and they traumatize the cartilage gently, not severely, but enough to trigger a growth repair.
Dr. Mixon, nothing they do is gentle. I work with these guys, you know.
Well, they describe it as gentle. But, yeah.
Okay. Have you ever watched a total joint replacement in person?
I have, and I'd never want to have one. So, yeah.
It's quieter in a wood shop than it is.
Yes, it is. With those big saws, you know, sawing off your bones and filing it down to make it smooth, and then, you know, jamming that long peg of the artificial joint down into the bone, you know, where your marrow used to be. And then filling it with bone cement.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
polymethyl methacrylate, which is kind of poisonous, actually.
Well, anyway, but, you know, that's the first contact lenses I ever wore back when I was 16 years old in the early 60s was methyl methacrylate. That's what they made the early lenses out of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and then the second thing I saw, and this one fascinates me, but I'm not quite sure what we're going to do with it. They're coupling artificial intelligence with EEGs, electroencephalograms.
Mm. Right.
And the artificial intelligence now can pick up dementia long before any physical findings, because your brain is starting to change before you become aware of it.
Mm.
The AI can actually tell who is becoming demented long before our cognitive tests would show it.
Uh-huh.
which will pick it up then years in advance.
Right.
Now, that requires you, of course, to start going in and getting your annual EEG, you know, when you're starting to maybe 50 or so, so we can pick this up 10 years in advance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, before you start noticing cognitive changes. But then comes the question, now what are you going to do about it? Okay, we can. This would allow us to predict, to tell who is in the very early brain changes, even though they don't yet have cognitive changes yet. It says the brain is changing in this pattern.
Yeah.
And then the next step is to start sorting out, is this frontal temporal? Is this Alzheimer's? Is this lacunar strokes? Is this what? So they'll be able to start telling us what kind of dementia you're heading for.
That's important.
And because if it's the lacunar strokes where you're getting hundreds of micro strokes, then you'd want to go into anticoagulants, that sort of thing, polyphenols. So you could head that off in advance. The same thing you do to protect people against heart attacks.
Yeah, I mean, often with dementia, the problem is that the symptoms overlap so that it's very difficult to know which type of dementia, especially between Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's.
Yes.
It's very difficult to make that distinction very early on.
It is. So, you know, this is a technological breakthrough, but then the next step is, okay, if we diagnose people 5 or 10 years before they have the discernible cognitive changes, but we say, yes, this patient is heading there. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
That's right. Diagnosis is worthless without therapy, effective therapy, which we're kind of limited in right now.
For dementia, absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, those were my two fascinomas from this year. The more practical one being the repair of cartilage.
Yeah.
With a new product, which you can bet the pharmaceutical companies will make billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
That,
that is a holy, one of many holy grails that they're after.
Yeah. So they'll, but that'll be shifting from the hospitals to the pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
You know?
And then in dementia too, like, you know, we always say early diagnosis is the key. There's so many more things that you can do to help maintain optimal memory if you find it early, and if you can take steps like lifestyle changes, manage the epigenetics a little bit.
But you know, the single biggest lifestyle change to prevent dementia is the one that's hardest to get Americans to do.
Exercise.
To get lean. You have to get rid of the excess body fat because that provides inflammation in the brain. And then you have to exercise to produce the myokines that help heal and repair and grow new brain tissue. So it's a two-step thing. But losing weight and taking up vigorous exercise and making muscle mass are the two hardest things to get Americans to do.
So true.
But they are, in fact, the most effective things we can do to prevent dementia.
Right. And then we don't know how the new GLP-1 agonists are going to change the landscape in this. We're still so early in this.
Yeah, well, 4% of the population is now on GLP agonists. Okay, so 340 million people. What's 4% of that? So, you know, 4, 8, 12, so about, okay, so somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 million people are taking that every week right now in the U.S.
And the problem, as you know, is you lose weight, but you lose muscle mass.
You lose muscle mass.
Correct, you do. Body fat mass is very difficult to change.
Yes.
Right.
And so...
And then what happens with the drugs is because you lose your appetite, you don't have the energy to work. So fatigue is a very common side effect. So people are not motivated. They're saying the scale change, but they and they're looking different, but they don't realize they're just losing muscle, muscle, and muscle.
Which is why if you're going to be on a GLP agonist... You need to be on anabolic hormone therapy at the same time.
And be monitored.
Yes.
Right.
But you need the, well, you can't be on the anabolic hormone without being monitored because those are controlled substances.
Right. But you can be on the GLP-1 and not be monitored right now.
Yes,
and that's
right.
not okay, I don't think.
No, I don't think it is. But that's why I'm saying you need the anabolic hormone load so your body has the tools to make muscle.
Absolutely.
Then you need to get off your butt and do some exercise.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
But the exercise without the anabolic hormone load is futile. You can't make the muscle because your body doesn't have the tools.
Yes. One of the main exercises, I tell my patients to exercise, of course, all their body, but one of the main ones is the triceps. pushing away from
the table. Yes.
You know, that's they just need to push away from that dinner table and
the TV, the screen, the dinner table.
Right. Yes.
And get up and move.
Yeah. Just say no, right?
Yep. That's right.
Or enough. I'm done. Yes.
But part of that, you know, is one of the problems of aging is you lose a nutrient sensing. You can't tell when you've had enough.
Yeah. Right.
And
yeah.
So older people eat until their stomach is distended because that's the only thing that lets them know they've had enough food. They can't tell that they've had enough calories. Young people can. Older people can't.
Yeah. We can all ignore it too.
That's right.
All right. Hey, doctors, we're going to take a quick break here and we will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. I'm going to give you a phone number to call right now. It's 1-800-465-8770. We're here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho. He's our pain doctor. That's what we like to call him. And Dr. Samira Umat. The number
pain
to call?
Pain in the what?
That too.
He's our doctor that can help you.
Pain in the hips and knees.
Yes.
All right.
Hips,
back,
knees,
and other places.
And shoulders and elbows.
If it's got a spine or cartilage, he could probably help you with what is ailing you. Dr. Dan Nelson is here. So if you've got questions specifically for him, today is the day to call. 1-800-465-8770 is that number. And we've already got folks on the line ready to talk. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
Hands, touching hands, reaching out. Touching me, touching you.
And we're back with more Leading Edge Medicine and a very good morning. We are back with three doctors, not one, not two, but three in the studio. Dr. Samira Umat, we have Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho. And welcome back, doctors. The phones have already gone crazy. They are ready with questions for you. So let's go to the phones with caller number one. And I believe that is that Jerry on the line for us?
Jerry or Terry?
Let's see here.
Hey.
I got all excited.
Yeah.
Hi, Jerry from Mount Lake Terrace, right?
Okay, yes. And before I get to my topic, I just wanted to follow up on that GLP-1 peptide thing. A while back, I saw Dr. Mark Hyman interview another doctor who uses it and others in his practice, and he referred to a mouse model experiment where they severed the Achilles tendon and then treated them with that, and a month later, they were completely healed. Back to normal. Anyway, so there seems to be a lot of uses for that coming up.
And what we're finding with the GLP-1 agonists is that they actually are improving cardiovascular tone, too. So it seems to be protective against heart attacks and strokes. And how much of that is due to the weight loss and how much is an independent factor of the metabolic changes from the drug,
right?
We're still sorting out.
Right. I mean, they do have an impact on inflammation. So inflammation markers are definitely improving. Heart disease is improving. Risk for cardiovascular events is decreasing.
Yeah.
And then I've heard some talk about, you know, given that the side effect of antidepressants includes weight gain, should we be incorporating these medications with those drugs when patients know that they're going to need it? Yeah.
Although also, you know, depression is correlated very highly with weight, with obesity, because you get inflammation in the brain. The body fat is kicking out pro-inflammatory peptides and cytokines, and it's causing inflammation in your joints as well as inflammation in your brain. So overweight people have a whole lot more mood disorders as a result of the inflammation in the brain.
But the GLP-1s are also causing depression. Suicidal ideation and depression is increasing, and so that is being studied in Europe right now. Studies have not been published. So, you know, it's time to kind of reflect on the side effects. Yes. Medullary cancer of the thyroid, along with depression and suicidal ideation, are very high up there. So, you know, you have to be very careful when you use these drugs.
Well, we're back to Dr. Mixon's first rule.
Yes.
Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt.
Right.
And that applies to these drugs, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that's not exactly what you called about. But
but
that was a nice discursive, though.
But speaking of hurt, a little bit of background. I'm trying to figure out if there's a connection between two different situations here. Before I left the Air Force about 50 years ago, they removed all my wisdom teeth in two different sessions, right side 1 hour appointment, left side 1 hour appointment. Now on the left side, the upper one came out very easily. The rest of the hour was digging and going after number 17, lower left side. And it bruised the jaw so much it took over a week to heal. It felt like the Novocaine at one point had never worn off. Anyway, ever since then, there's been this issue, I don't know how to describe it, but it still feels like it never really healed. Okay, so that's, like I say, 50 years ago. Now, I'm experiencing further up the jawbone where it hinges behind the ear, a nerve, inflamed nerve, so that when I just touch and brush down the bone, it just shoots a really sharp pain all the way through my neck and sometimes across the back of my head from ear to ear, like it's the beginning of a migraine or something, but it's less than a fraction of a second. And I'm trying to figure out, is there any connection? Because I don't know where those nerves run. I don't know if there's some connection with what's going on with the missing number 17 or something else. But it's really annoying. It hurts. Any ideas?
Well, lots of ideas. I think the neck and face, head, that's all innervated in a very complex and sometimes mysterious way. So we have patients who come in with neck pain primarily, but then they'll also complain of ear pain and jaw pain, of course, occipital headaches.
Right.
A lot of migraines that I see have been misdiagnosed as classic migraine headaches, and they're really cervicogenic headaches. Mm-hmm. They're really common. You know, I've had patients who've been on migraine medicine for 20, 30 years, and we do a little workup, and we find it's really coming from their neck, and that they don't really have true migraine
at
all.
Or it could have a combination.
Or a combination, for sure. So, you know, if you came in, Jerry, we'd have to do a full assessment, probably take x-ray, probably an MRI of the neck, and also MRI of the, you know, the jaw, the sinuses, all that stuff. Mm. Might have to send you to Dr. Umat's husband in some cases.
Well,
you
know, I'm sure he's had a sinus workup already because this is chronic. So, and they've been in the teeth and the mouth area. So I'm sure a CT scan on of the nose and sinuses has probably been done.
It has to be within the last 2 years, though.
Okay. Yeah, but and what he's describing sounds like the lesser occipital nerve,
C2. Mm-hmm. C2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, C2 lesser occipital, because that's the one that comes out around the muscles and then goes up behind the ear, up the back of the skull on the side, laterally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that can be sorted out fairly easily with an occipital nerve block. Greater occipital nerve, lesser occipital.
Those are very rewarding because when you get it right, the patient does.
Oh, it's amazing. I've had patients
immediate relief,
I've had patients who started crying once the nerve blocks started working because they hadn't had this kind of
pain
relief.
Pain-free,
Yeah. And this is where people are doing things like, you know, the local anesthetics that you're talking about, and then a little Botox to paralyze those nerves long term.
Right.
And that'll give them 3-4 months of relief from a single injection.
Yeah. Those are very useful, actually, the Botox medications. Now, the question, I guess, is how is this related to your dental extractions from years and years ago?
I have no idea.
So that might be hard to parse out. It might be totally incidental to what's going on with this other pain. I'm suspecting that this is probably coming from your neck, just because when I hear mysterious things, I always trace it back to the spine, cervical spine, lumbar spine. Just like, okay, let's go back and see.
And this is C2-3.
Right.
That
definitely
would provide this nerve.
Right.
So. Okay, that helps me. And I'm scheduled on Wednesday, I think it is the 21st or so, for imaging on the jaw to see if there's anything going on there. And but I think I understand what you're saying, that the C2 connection might be much more significant. And that was really kind of the first thing I thought about, was cervical vertebrae. But I've got also a bit of a rib injury and stuff. I was going to go see my chiropractor because I haven't seen him in a long time, see if he can just kind of straighten something out. But anyway, okay, I get
this
it.
Is one of those. This is one of those things Dr. Nelson could do an injection just with some local anesthetic. And
right.
If the pain goes away from that one shot, you've got a diagnosis and you've got something you can do for therapy.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much. And the research, I think, on these peptides is really exciting. This doctor that was interviewed also cured his own pineal gland issue to the point where he no longer has to supplement melatonin. So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was chatting with chatting with some folks in the research group at University of Utah, which is my old alma mater, and they're doing research on amniotic fluid, which, of course, contains a whole lot of anti-inflammatory peptides and growth factors from the baby to support the baby and produced by the baby. And he was actually, based on his research with animals, injected himself for his long-standing arthritic pain, and just with amniotic fluid into the joint. And he said within 2 weeks, he was totally pain-free. Mm. So, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of interesting stuff going on.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, that is nothing the FDA has approved. That happens to be the researcher who's doing the animals says, well, I happen to have this stuff. It works well with my animals. I'll shoot me.
It's the same thing, you know, I hear neurologists tell me when they have Botox for medical purposes and there's a little bit left, they go, okay, what do I do with this leftover Botox?
Oh, yeah.
Do they have a wife? Yes. Okay, well, thank you, Jerry, for the call. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Give us an update, Jerry, when you find out more stuff about
your situation. Sort it out and let us know how much our guesses might be right or wrong, okay?
Good luck.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. This is Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat, and we have Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho here as well. Several calls ready to go. We're going to dive in, get on the phones, and talk with you about whatever is hurting you, your health concerns, and what's going on in your life. 1-800-465-8770 is that number to call. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with Bob, James, and Molly in just a moment. Stay right there. Oh, you like that one, Dr. Mixon, right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, one more last chance before. But then he said, you know, this good old boy who's running around on you, but he's at the same time asking her for one more last chance. So let me give you a hint, Mr. Cowboy. Stop running around on her, you fool.
Yeah.
That'll go a long way towards one more last chance.
There you go,
Even a cowboy should figure that one out.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, are you ready for some more calls? We have them coming in today. Leading Edge Medicine, 1-800-465-8770. We're going to head to Buckley. We have Bob on the line. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. So I have a question about a cold, a little unusual for a question like that in August. But back in April, I got a sore throat, and it just got worse over a week. Then at the end of that week, I got on an airplane, and it got into my sinuses. And then that following week, it just continued to get worse. I had a dry cough. And the really weird thing to me is I gained 15 pounds. And most of that, I think, was in swelling in my legs. They were swollen from my hips to my toes. So I went into urgent care. They did a throat swab, said it wasn't bacterial, but they gave me antibiotics anyway. I took those, didn't help. So then about a week after that, I went managed to get into my primary care. That's kind of tough these days.
Yes,
and
it is.
They did some blood work. My albumin was low at 3.4. The red blood was low at 4.07. My absolute neutrophils were high at 7.4. The absolute immature granulocytes were high at 0.2. Like, that seemed to me like twice normal.
Yeah, bone marrow stress reaction, yeah. What was your H&H, so hemoglobin, hematocrit?
Oh, geez, let me go back and look at that. Where, what would that be in my...
HCT and HGB.
Do I have a metabolic panel or...
It would be in your CBC.
CBC.
CBC, yeah.
I guess differential. It would be CBC?
Well, yeah, in your CBC, there should be an HGB, which stands for hemoglobin, and a HCT, which stands for hematocrit.
Yeah, it was... the hemoglobin was 13.1, and the HCT... T was 38.6, kind of on the low side there, maybe.
Yeah, but you're not anemic. You're within the low end of the normal range. I tell you, the first thing that pops into my mind when I hear this sore throat that gets worse, and then you've got peripheral edema and so on, is COVID. It doesn't sound like anybody ran a COVID test on you.
No, went to two places. Neither one of them suggested it. I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't. But I didn't. I had COVID before, and it was much milder, and I lost my sense of taste and smell. That didn't happen this time. So maybe it was a mutation of that.
Probably. I mean, you got to remember, COVID is an RNA virus. They mutate very, very quickly. And you can figure, on average, you'll have a new variant about every 4 to 6 months. Okay. RNA viruses are single strands of ribonucleic acid, and the DNA viruses have a repair mechanism. If there's a mutation, they can clear the mutation, they clear the damage, the single nucleotide substitutions. But RNA viruses can't. And so since they don't have a nucleic acid repair mechanism, every time anything hits that strand, whether it's cosmic radiation or what you name it, anything that damages DNA or RNA in this case, results in a mutation. Some of those mutations, in fact, many of them, are not viable. Those particular viral particles die. But since you've got billions of viral particles in each individual who has COVID, it only takes a few that become viable mutations. And so we see rapid changes in COVID, just like we do with flu, influenza. You know, every year, the flu shots, they're guessing which variant we've got coming out this year because they mutate so quickly. All RNA viruses mutate, and COVID is in that category. So when I hear somebody with a sore throat that gets worse and worse, and then you start getting systemic symptoms with a distal edema, makes me worry about, you know, was your heart function decreasing? Because cardiac issues are really famous with COVID. Pulmonary issues, famous with COVID. Neurologic issues, famous with COVID. So you can get a wide variety of symptoms. So I'm just kind of surprised that, as COVID aware as the whole society is right now, you saw two separate practitioners with systemic and oropharyngeal symptoms, and nobody took a COVID swab. It just kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was. It's my fault, too. I should have requested that. I know that, and I didn't. But I'm kind of concerned. Is this the next time I get COVID, am I going to go through this type of thing again?
Perhaps. Or, I mean, you haven't given me your age, but just
variation.
You know, listening to the tone of your voice, you are a man of some mature years. I'm guessing, you know, something over 60, and which puts you up into, you know, like everyone sitting at this table a increasing risk group. Samara's the least risky.
Absolutely.
Dan is the is the medium risky, and I'm turning 77 this month. So
and I'm not at the table. Major. So.
That's right. You're not at the table, yeah. Lynette. So, and you're just a child anyway, so yeah. We don't worry about that.
I love you.
So. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, didn't you teach us to defy aging? Aren't we doing that?
Yeah, my BMI is 25. I'm 77. Mm-hmm. I exercise a half hour every day, do 6,000-7,000 steps. And good I was just out, worked 4 hours in the yard, you know, spreading beauty good. Bark, shoveling, all that with no problems. But I'm a little worried about, you know, where I'm going with this.
Yeah, well, that pedal edema, though, tells me that something is going on. You're, you know, either you've got poor lymphatic drainage or your venous return to your heart is impaired in some way.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, those are the two big reasons for people to get swelling in their feet and ankles.
Did he mention any shortness of breath at nighttime?
He had not.
Okay.
I mentioned it as a possibility, but okay. He didn't say, oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought of, too.
Yeah.
Shortness
yeah.
of breath.
Yeah.
So, but now that we've all three brought it up, did you have any shortness of breath?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, good. Yeah, so.
A myocarditis, CHF type, probably unlikely, right? With that.
Probably, yeah, because he's not having chest pain and no shortness of breath.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, COVID can hit the nerve supply. It can hit the muscles. You know, he may have some distal myositis that is decreasing his muscular contractions down there to pump that fluid back up towards the heart. So, yeah, if this is reoccurring or getting worse, go in and get your COVID studies done just for the heck of it, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm past all that. I'm back to normal, and I just don't know what to do going down the road from here, you know. Should I try to figure out more about this? Or,
okay,
I mean,
well,
I
let me ask you the first
now,
most important question that I can possibly ask. Are you a patient at Longevity Medical Clinic?
No, but I should be.
You should be. Okay, everybody over 50 should be a patient at Longevity Medical Clinic, because if you want to live the longest, strongest, fastest, leanest, smartest, sexiest, happiest life you possibly can, you need to be a patient at Longevity Medical Clinic. It's that simple. Everything else is second and third best.
Hmm. Alrighty, well,
okay.
I'll see where it goes from here. I don't know. Hope I don't get COVID again.
One of the places you need to go is to get your health analysis at Longevity. That's where it needs to go. But okay.
And it's free, right? Isn't it still free?
You see, this
sort
is, you got to remember, this show is not a public service announcement. It's an infomercial. Okay, I pay for this time. And the purpose of paying is not to help society, although I enjoy helping society. But the big thing is to get enough patients at Longevity so I can afford to keep doing the show.
Right.
So, all right. Thank you for the call,
okay.
Sir.
Bye-bye. You bet. Bye.
But,
all right.
But, you know, all jokes aside, Jerry, you do have a very good point in that he's at the age group where things are declining and
he's
the odds are against him.
Yes.
And in order to shift those odds, there are many things he can do. Yes, he's active. Yes, his BMI is very good. And that's all great. That actually means that's a good place for us to start. But we know that physiologically, everything else is against him.
Yeah, but you see, he gave us a BMI.
Yeah.
Which is a body mass
yes,
index.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which just tells us how much he weighs for his
that's
height
right.
and age.
Right.
But the real question is, what is his percentage of lean muscle mass?
Right.
What is his bone density? And what is his percentage of body fat?
Right.
You know, 25 says he's right at the upper limit of normal.
Correct.
Okay. Any more weight, he becomes
overweight. Yeah.
And how much of that is muscle?
Yes.
And how much of that is
no, I completely agree with you. We have people that come in the normal range, but they have low muscle mass, and all they have is fat, and that fat is what's contributing to that BMI. And so we see that all the time, and we call them our skinny fat
our
people.
Our skinny fats, yeah.
We have a lot of that. And then the thing is, something that we're seeing more and more of is that men are losing bone density earlier and earlier nowadays than they used to. Young men in their 50s and 60s are being diagnosed with osteopenia. And that is shocking to me because that was never the case.
Never the case. But that's because anabolic hormone loads are dropping earlier and earlier in life.
That's right.
And we now have men in their 30s that have anabolic hormone loads that we would have seen in their 50s and 60s back in the 1960s and 70s.
That's right.
So, you know, this is an important... So, no, I was tweaking him a little bit about coming to be a patient, but it's a very serious concern because men in their 70s that are developing the sort of symptoms he is need some help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the earlier we can help him, the better results we'll get.
Absolutely. And as it is at 70s, you're still behind the eight ball. So you really should have done that a decade or two ago.
That's true. But better to do it at 70s instead of 80s.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have patients in their 90s.
Yes. Right. Well, I've started patients in their late 90s and was able to help, but not nearly as well as I could have helped had they seen us 20, 30, 40 years earlier.
Sure.
Yeah. Jerry, the population decrease in androgens you alluded to,
yes.
What do you attribute that to?
We don't really know.
Okay.
It actually started in the late 1960s.
Mm.
And every decade since the late 60s, we're seeing a decline in the normal male androgen level. Mm-hmm. It's going down and down and down. It's reached the point now that men in their 30s have levels that back in the 60s we'd have seen in the late 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it the sedentary lifestyle? Is increasing body fat?
Right.
You know, are there changes in diet?
Yeah.
Is it more ultra-processed foods?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. But you correlate with the fact that young people now, even in their 20s and 30s, are having far less sex than they used to.
Mm.
Sex drive is declining among our young people. People in their 20s that used to be hypersexual are now becoming abstinent, which is, you know, adding to our low birth rate because neither the men nor the women feel erotic anymore. I mean, it's just, it's shocking. And, but that's related to the declining anabolic hormone load in both men and women.
All right. Well, you hear the music, so we're going to take a quick break and back to more phone calls. We're going to talk a little bit more about COVID. That's coming up. Ankles and rotator cuffs. Those are the next few calls on Leading Edge Medicine. Here's our number to call to get into our phone queue. It's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. Well, we were standing. Now we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. We are in our brand new studio. Absolutely gorgeous. All new equipment here. I still get to learn and flying solo because the engineer and the producer are not roaming around. So I guess I'm the producer today. Is that right, Dr. Mixon?
That's right.
Yay.
Producerette.
Producerette. I'll take it. I'll take it. Okay. So we have another caller, a couple of them on the line. We're going to go now to James in Tacoma. Welcome to the show, James.
Hello, James.
How can we help?
Could that be Dave?
Maybe it's Dave.
I don't know.
That kind of sounds like James.
Okay.
Let's go for Dave in Tacoma.
Hello, Dave. Good morning.
Hi, Dave.
Good morning, sir. How can we help?
Well, I have a daughter that works for an airline in Tampa. She told me she just got over her fifth case of COVID.
Oh, dear.
Should I be nervous seeing
her? Well,
I have never had COVID.
Okay. Mm. Well, you want to make sure that she has been symptom-free, you know, for a minimum of 3 to 5 days before you see her, because judging from your voice, you're, you know, in your 70s probably.
Good.
So, you know, that's you are at high risk just based on your age because your immune system is not as responsive as it used to be. Tell me about your daughter. Is she overweight herself?
Oh, maybe a little bit, not much.
Okay.
I mean, you know, she's dealing with everyone that gets on and off that airplane. She helps them on, helps them off, helps them through the kiosk. She has extreme exposure.
Yes, she does.
to people.
Yep. And people often carry COVID because you become contagious a few days before you have any symptoms. So, you know.
Yes. Well, I just, when she said number five, I just thought, I don't know if I want to see her. And I love her to pieces, but.
No, I understand.
She's in Tampa and I'm here in Tacoma. So, okay. Just symptoms 4 or 5 days. I do have a comment for Dr. Nelson if we have time.
Go ahead. Sure.
Absolutely.
He's sitting right here.
Dr. Nelson, you treated, consulted myself and my wife four times. I live in Tacoma. My only complaint was that you operate out of Kirkland. Now, you know Dr. Mitchell, he has a place in Tacoma, you know. But listen, you and Sarah, I've never had a consult more thorough and personal in my life than what you gave us. I want to thank you.
Oh, well, I appreciate the good word. Yeah, we've thought about, you know, opening up something down south or, but.
Actually, I've been nagging him for over a year to come work for me here at Longevity.
I was thinking, well, maybe we can arrange for a drone that can come and do your house and do injections.
Drones put me out of an aerial photography business. Let's not go there.
Yeah, now every 12-year-old has an aerial drone that he's taking pictures with. So,
under your consult, I chose to go forward with a knee replacement.
Okay.
And I want you to understand why. It was my knee bowed out when I walked.
Right.
I was wearing a brace. And we talked about stem cell. The thing that put me over the edge was you said, I may have to continue wearing a brace. Mm-hmm. My knee now, this is third month. I'm doing just fine. That knee is as stiff as a, let's say, telephone pole. It does not bend whatsoever out. And that was why I chose to go that route. Under quite a while of indecision, but did go forward. And I'm happy.
So the knee is still stiff?
Is the knee stiff now?
No, I mean it's straight. It does not bend
straight.
Out.
It's improved.
Oh, straight. Okay,
it's
improved.
Stiff in a good way, straight.
Yeah, as opposed to bowed. It was bowed for earlier, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's a good illustration. Well, I was just going to say that's a good illustration of the fact that you can't fix everything with stem cells.
Yeah.
You've got a mechanical problem. It's just, yeah.
You told me. I mean, you're honest, and you were so thorough and honest and explained all the possibilities and the possibilities that may not work. And so if I had to continue with the brace, I wasn't going to do it. But I'm a very happy guy, and thank you.
Well, I appreciate that.
You know, this is one of the things I have always appreciated about Dan is if he can't help, he'll tell you he can't help. Uh-huh. And he gives you the odds. He says, you know, you got about X percent chance that this is going to happen and Y percent chance that's going to happen. But, you know, he recognizes that we're grown-ups. It's our bodies. The final decisions need to be ours.
Yeah. Right, you know? Right.
And so what he provides is information and the willingness to, you know, help you if that's the choice you make.
Right.
So.
Right. And honestly, I'm not a stem cell clinic, you know. No. I'm not going to offer stem cells to everybody who walks. I don't have that pressure. I have lots of tools in my toolbox. And a lot of them are great. So I'm going to just be an honest broker and say, hey, that's not going to work, but we have other things. Or I have a gentleman upstairs who can do a knee replacement. You know, and so I feel like I've got a pretty good space to be working in and doing what's in the best interest of the patient.
Yeah. Options are wonderful.
Yes, they are.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, sir.
Thank you, folks.
We appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, you ready for another call?
Give us another call.
We got them. They're just stacking up here at 1-800-465-8770, Leading Edge Medicine. We're going to head to Renton, and we have Molly on the line.
Hello, Molly.
Good morning.
How can we be of help, madam?
I'm in my late 60s. I had a distal fibula fracture 3 years ago, which that all healed. But now I have a thick ankle that just won't go back to the size of my other ankle. I have PT every 2 weeks, and it takes down the kind of sickness for about 8 or 9 days, and then it comes back. I walk probably 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day. I am not overweight. I'm baffled.
Right.
Right.
So the question is, what's causing the continued inflammation of that ankle?
Right. So ongoing. And so a couple of things. You didn't have surgery on the distal fibula fracture?
No. No, I did go to an orthopedic surgeon who said he would check it in a couple of weeks to make sure it was healing correctly.
So you had a non-displaced fracture that we just let heal on its own, right? So that is a little... The fact that you didn't have surgery that should have healed up pretty uneventfully. And so when you say thick ankle, is it like kind of a swelling situation or?
Kind of swelling. It's when the PT happens, both tibialis muscles are sore at the touch, mm-hmm. and so is the plantar fascia.
Okay. So when you push on this thick area, can you make a dimple with pressure with your index finger holding it? And
the dimple stays when you take your finger away?
A little bit.
Okay.
So that's some edema.
Some edema. So, you know, what would be causing that edema? I mean, Dr. Mixon mentioned chronic inflammation of some sort. Mm-hmm. That's probably would be on the list for sure.
Well, and the PT resolves it for a week or so, or 10 days, so... Once more,
Yeah, and I'm just a little baffled that it's almost like there could be a lymphatic drain. She's got edema.
Well, with the physical therapist, she's doing some exercises. So the question is, are you doing those exercises when you're not in physical therapy?
Yes, I do the ankle circles, and like every evening I roll my foot around a golf ball for the plantar fascia.
Okay. And does the swelling become worse at night? and does it resolve in the morning when you get up or not?
I wear a compression sock at night and it goes down.
Why don't you wear a compression sock during the daytime?
I don't like them.
Okay.
But which do you dislike the most, the compression sock or the swelling?
The compression sock.
Well, at nighttime, you can put your foot or your ankle on a pillow and keep it elevated a little bit, and you may not even need that compression sock. I think it's probably more helpful to you to wear that sock during the daytime, especially when you're just sitting and not moving so much.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing I'm wondering about, Dan... And this is clearly not my area. This is clearly not my area of expertise, but might you think about just PRP and MRI to see if you can get a good look at what the ligamentous tissues and stuff are like?
Absolutely. I would get x-rays, MRI at a minimum. What I wanted to ask you, Molly, was what does the skin look like around that area? Is the skin just like the rest of the leg or just like the other ankle? Or is it a little bit discolored?
It's not discolored. It's wrinkly, kind of.
Okay.
The skin doesn't look the same.
And there's no sensitivity? I mean, there's no
pain
involved, correct, with this swelling?
I don't have any pain. I have a little bit of numbness under the foot.
Right. Okay. Little numbness. Boy, this is not...
So the tarsal nerve is probably getting tweaked a bit, or at least branches of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are you very active during the daytime, or do you have a sedentary lifestyle?
Oh, I'm very active. I walk 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day.
Oh, good.
Yeah. All right.
This is one where I'd probably call my good friend Dr. John Hall, who's our foot and ankle specialist. Not that I'm recommending surgery. He's a orthopedic surgeon who's trained in that foot and ankle discipline.
But I love getting his input on situations mm-hmm. like this and saying, hey, John, take a look. What do you have? What do you think? Because yeah. right now, you know, again, we're on the radio. We can't, I can't right. examine you mm-hmm. and that. And right. But at a minimum, we'd get, if I saw you in the office, I'd be getting x-rays and most likely an MRI yeah. and kind of going for there, you know, just searching for something. Even a, might have to get a bone spec scan at some point to see if there's a nidus of inflammation somewhere.
Or an area where there's still a fracture that hasn't healed. There could be right. some little non-union right. area.
And the bone spec would probably show that if that's the case. So,
are you suggesting I come to your office or what?
Well, yeah, absolutely. But let me ask you where you live first.
Renton.
Oh, Renton's not that far. I mean, no. you certainly could come to our office. I mean, we would certainly welcome you with open arms. If people are coming from a long ways, I try to refer them to people that can do some of the preliminary work initially.
Locally.
Yeah. Yeah. So, does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm on Medicare, but I'm not on an Advantage plan, so I can go anywhere.
That's great. Yeah. Oh. Love that.
Well, and with this sort of injury, you know, you're going to need somebody to do some studies. Again, the MRI, maybe the SPECT scan, mm-hmm. and then perhaps a second opinion with Dr. Hall.
I think that those would probably all take place.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the nice things about Dan is that if he is at all uncertain what's going on, he kicks you up to get a second opinion with one of the other 14 different orthopods in his group. You know, I had a disc injury recently that was giving me some grief and not healing very fast. And so he sent me up to see a second opinion. And the second opinion doctor basically told me the same thing Dan did, but at least I had two smart guys looking at the same issue. So.
Right. Yeah. No, it's great. I think I used the term kind of like a backstop.
With my back injury, we got a backstop?
Yeah, backstop.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was unintended, but we'll go with it. But it's just nice. And lots of times it's just a what we call curbside consult.
Did she ask your name?
Oh, sorry.
Dr. Daniel Nelson.
Oh, yeah. No, the other doctor he was talking about.
Or Dr. Hall.
Dr. John Hall and John, J-O-N, not
J-O-H. The H.
Okay. No H.
Okay.
Yeah, the Scandinavian John.
Yeah. Okay. And he's just a wonderful human being in addition to being a very good doctor.
Okay, right. Thanks.
Thank you so much for the call, Molly.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho, and Dr. Samira Umat. My name is Lynette, and here's that number to call. It's been busy this morning, but don't give up. 1-800-465-8770. We're going to talk about rotator cuffs and Humira, and let's see what else. Some more positive information for you right here on Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. We'll be back.